Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Beyond good, beyond evil, beyond your wildest imagination.
Hi, this is John Semper Jr., the head writer and producer of Spider-Man the Animated Series, and you are listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
This is a court of law, not a Saturday morning cartoon show.
Tooncast Beyond. This is episode 172 of Tooncast Beyond. I'm, of course, Chief Joe Mike. Joining me once again, continuing on with our superhero 90s action block here in Tooncast Beyond, is Eduardo. We're going to be talking about Spider-Man the Animated Series Season 3. Hello, sir.
Yeah. Good to be back.
Good to be back. And Season 3 pretty much ramps up with stories and everything, and out of the 14 episodes that season 3 saw, there's, like, you know, last time with season 2, there's only like one or two that I feel are out of place a little bit, but it's only a little bit this time. It's not, you know, oh, I think Hydro-Man needs to be at this point instead of that point. Because the one episode that I thought at first was going to be really out of place was The Spot, but obviously that then leads into Goblin War, and it kind of, you know, so it works. So season 3 of Spider-Man the Animated Series, I remember, you know, as I said last week, I remember, you know, watching a lot of these. This was 1996. This was April through April, May, September, November, and November. So, that's funny. I don't think he ever really watched this series, but my buddy Optimus Solo, who does the Powers of Grayskull series with me, season finale for this Turning Point, aired on his birthday in 1996, November 23rd.
Oh, man.
But I don't know if he's ever seen this series.
Wait, what's the rule on dropping spoilers?
The show's over 20 years old, dude.
Okay, yeah. All right. Just checking, because, I mean, hell, you know, how's that for, you know, happy birthday, we're going to "quote unquote, kill Mary Jane on your birthday."
Yeah, there you go.
Enjoy, Mazel Tov.
Yeah, there you go. Once again, you know, just to get it out of the way, we did it kind of at the end of last week, but we're going to do it at the beginning here. Animation still great. I do still think, and I'm sorry for harping on this, I do still think the transitions between the 2D standard animation that they were using and the 3D web swinging are still a little hard, but it's okay. I can deal with it. It's not that bad.
You know what? I agree with you. It can be a little jarring, but I think another part of me, as I get older, it's like, okay, this was mid-90s or so. CGI was first starting to become a thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, okay, yeah, it's a little jarring, but it's not like they have what we got now.
Well, right, but, okay, you know how in this series he'll have, Spidey will have that establishing shot of him basically side-scrolling, where he whips out a web, and he starts swinging side to side, and then it turns into the 3D. All as I would have wanted from that, and I understand the technology back then, it was still brand new, as you said. I just want a little bit of a fade instead of a hard,
yeah,
you know, kind of lean slowly into the turn. Don't skid away from it.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? That kind of thing. So many characters in this season. You know, you've got between Dr. Octopus, Dr. Strange, the Green Goblin,
Iron Man,
War Machine. Daredevil, the return of Venom and the birth of Carnage. And all throughout this season, we have the lovely Joan Lee, Stan Lee's wife, as Madam Web.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I love Madam Web.
Oh, yeah.
I absolutely love her because she is such a mother figure to Spider-Man, to Peter Parker. Like, okay, look, Aunt May technically is his mother figure, but when it comes to dealing with the hard choices that Spider-Man has to deal with and figure out stuff, Madam Web, as cruel as she was to, you know, just kind of have him dangling off her web there, she still, to me, looked like the mother figure Spider-Man needed at that point for going through what, you know, I'm preparing you for some big adventure that I won't tell you about, but, you know, have the faith of the child, have this, have that, and that leads him in, you know, and well, I absolutely love that.
Maybe not mother figure, maybe more like, you know, kind of Spider-Man's Obi-Wan, Spider-Man's, you know, the Ramirez to Spider-Man's Connor McLeod, you know, that kind of thing where, yeah, it's train him, and on occasion you got to smack him upside the head and go, hey, look, okay, yeah, this sucks, but come on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just think it was absolute genius of them. Now, I know Avi Arad and Stan Lee had something to do with this series. I know they were, you know, they're listed as executive producers, but I mean, hello, Stan Lee created the damn characters. Or he was one half of the creative team that created those characters. So, like, I don't know how much of Stan's involvement was, and again, I'm probably gonna reference this every episode, folks. Go back to the John Sipper Jr. interview. It's in each of the Tooncast Beyond episode posts for this series coverage. And he might have answered. I might have asked him that question, how much was Stan's involvement in this? But the fact that they got his wife to voice Madam Web was just amazing. Because what we'll talk about when we finally get to season 5 and how the series ends, and just, it's just so great. It really, really is. Characters for this season. So we got the appearance of Doctor Strange, and have we seen Baron Mordo already or no?
He debuted this season.
Okay. So we got Doctor Strange, because the Doctor Strange episode was the origin of him and Baron Mordo, and he tells, okay, so yeah. So we got Baron Mordo, we got Dormammu and all that, so we got those characters. We've got, Taina and Mousy in that two-parter. We have the Green Goblin, Norman Osborn. We've got the whole Wilson Fisk, Richard Fisk thing in the frame job, which is where Daredevil comes in. Absolutely love seeing Daredevil in this. Just so good. And then, you know, Venom and Carnage come. Venom comes back and Carnage is born, as I said. And then, you know, Goblin War and all that. Hobgoblin versus Green Goblin. Just Oh, so many good and interesting characters that come into the season. And I just feel that it, since season one, it has been a very natural progression of how they're introducing. They're not pulling a Spider-Man 3. Of course, this is 20 years before Spider-Man 3. You know what I mean? But it's like, but that's the thing. Like today, sometimes certain pieces of media, whether it's a movie, whether it's a cartoon, whether it's a TV show, sometimes people are like, hey, let's give them this, 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 and this, and this. No. Slow progression. Introduce one. And that's what I love about this series is the part one, part twos. It's basically, you know, part one, part two, kind of like movie of the week kind of thing where you have to, you know, come back every Saturday to watch the second part, or you know, you watch the first part of a new story, and you know, so that's what I love about this series. Any characters that you did or did not like from this season, whether it be new ones that we saw or continuing ones that we'd seen before?
Wow. Well, first of all, I love the guest stars, from like Doctor Strange to Iron Man and War Machine and Daredevil. I like how they integrated this wider Marvel universe into Spider-Man. I have to admit, I liked the little girl from that two-parter more than I thought I would.
Yeah, Tyena.
I mean, at first it's like, introducing the cute little girl. But then, yeah, I was like, oh, okay, she's all right, that's cool. And the thing that got me, though, is I saw the two-parter before I had known about and read about the Spider-Man comic, The Boy Who Loves Spider-Man,
right,
which this was adopted from.
Right.
And, you know, spoiler alert, when I saw the end of the second part, when Spider-Man's swinging away from her and you see where she lives... I was floored.
Oh my god, that was hard.
It was the feels in the 1990s. I was like, oh man, and it just made everything then made sense, and it's like, oh.
See, I did not remember that part. Going back watching so season 3, episode 2 and 3. Season 3, episode 2 and 3. Why the hell do I keep saying that? Episode 2 is called Make a Wish. Episode 3 is Attack of the Octobot. Now, when I rewatched this and I saw the Make-A-Wish, I'm like, oh, that's okay. And I didn't really connect the dots between the title of the first part, the letter from the parent, the letter from the parents, and then the end.
Part two.
Oh my god! I'm like,
it's like, oh man.
Because, and I don't want to sound morbid or cruel or heartless here, folks, if the little girl's going to eventually not survive, revealing the fact that Peter Parker is Spider-Man is not really that big of a deal. I'm sorry. Okay. That sounds so cruel.
That's a little cruel. I mean,
I know.
To rephrase it another way, the fact that it then makes sense that he revealed his identity, because you know, if you're gonna give a girl who's terminal, kind of one last happy memory, why not that? You know, that she gets to be one of a very select group that gets to know who he really is.
Yeah, and I know that was bad.
And who gets to know said secret willingly?
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, who gets to be among a very select group of friends and loved ones. I mean,
and
Spider-Man could do for her, that I think is like, yeah, that works.
Absolutely. And, you know, looking back on it, and again, everyone, I'm sorry for how that came out. I did not mean to be that. I was not trying to be cruel. You know, I'm not trying to do that. Letters to Cleo song, Cruel to Be Kind at all. It's just one of those things where, looking back on that two-parter, the Make-A-Wish, Attack of the Octobot, once I saw the terminally ill thing at the end, I'm like, oh my god, Spider-Man is John Cena! Because John Cena works with Make-A-Wish and all that and whatever. But yeah, the fact that she's, like you said, among the select few that actually know, and I'm wondering if, Because he comes into it with a whole attitude of, oh, I don't need fan mail, blah, blah, blah. Madam Web comes up and smacks him on the head and whatever else. And I'm wondering, even though we as an audience didn't see it, I'm wondering if he, swinging in, saw the sign? Even though it's written to for him to not show us a reaction to why he is, you know what I mean?
He might have.
Yeah.
He might have. If not coming in, he may have caught it coming out, like, at one point or another.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, plus, they have the address, you know, and then you have the letter, so it's like,
yeah,
if you had a chance to read it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The one thing I think is interesting about this two-parter is the whole brainwashing of Spider-Man, of Doc Ock, and all that. I thought that was kind of cool, and obviously...
Well, and it's a, you know, and it's a trope. It's a trope that you got to go through, once in a while, have the hero brainwashed by the villain. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And it did, I think it has happened a couple of times in the comics, if not from Doc Ock, from like a couple of people. I think... Mm-hmm. I think at one time Spidey was brainwashed to work with the Frightful Four against the Fantastic Four. You know, it's a thing. It's a thing you got to go through every once in a while.
And really, going back and watching this, the first thing I thought of was Superior Spider-Man.
In hindsight, yeah.
This is the first thing I thought of after rewatching this. Because again, We mentioned at the end of the last episode, this series is not on DVD anywhere. It's on, you know, you can get it bootlegged and things. It's currently streaming on Hulu for how long, who knows. That's kind of why we're doing this whole superhero 90s thing right now. So that way, in case it disappears from... I have other sources that I can find it at, but I'm just saying, it's easier to just watch it on Hulu. So, you know... it's just one of those things where I want to get it done now, and because I enjoy talking about it, I enjoy going back and watching it, and all that. We have the first appearance of the Green Goblin in this series, and oh wow!
Yeah, I find it kind of funny that they did a reverse, because in the comics, of course, the Hobgoblin came from the Green Goblin.
Right.
And then they switch it out. They had the Hobgoblin first and then put up the Green Goblin. Although it's kind of cool because you had Norman Osborn hanging around before that. So then you get kind of this progression into the Green Goblin.
Right, yeah.
But and what a cool visual of having that Hobgoblin mask, like, change color.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean... I also got to give the creative team of this cartoon, I got to give them credit. I got to give them kudos at the fact that they were able to have a character like Carnage and be able to pull it off, because, you know, last episode that we did when we talked season 2, I joked about how you had the Punisher and they had to come up with an excuse as to why he was non-lethal, and imagine some poor parent picking up Punisher War Journal and being like, "Wait a minute." You know, almost the same thing here, in the sense that, I mean, just leaving out Carnage's more recent appearances and sticking to Carnage circa this time.
Yeah.
He's a pretty violent character. I mean, you know, you have him, you know, his first appearance, that first story arc where he appeared in the comics, he jumps into the middle of a rock concert and kills people and then tells the audience, "See, look how easy it is." You know, just to be able to have that character and pull him off in a cartoon without having, you know, without having to have him kill a few people, you know, I got to give him credit.
Mm-hmm. One thing I noticed about this one, this season, is, as we mentioned before, Daredevil. And we'll talk about him a little bit in more detail in a moment. But one thing, going back and watching this again, reminded me of, I think it's Rucka's Punisher Warzone. There was a point in the Greg Rucka run of the Punisher a couple of years ago. Whenever his run... I did podcasts on the Pullback a few years ago. So whenever those came out, there's a point where Punisher, Spider-Man, and... who's the other guy? I know Ryan Merkley and Jake and Dane from Punisher Bounty Count are just screaming at their eye devices. There was Punisher, Spider-Man, and there was a third team up character from Marvel for the Greg Rucka run, and that's kind of no. It was Daredevil. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I was about ready to kind of pull into pull into the Marvel universe in my brain and start pulling.
Yeah, no, it was Punisher, Daredevil, and Spider-Man. That's right. That's the whole reason why I brought it up is because Daredevil is in the framed yeah. and the Man Without Fear. So, what the hell is wrong with me tonight? So Punisher, Daredevil, and Spider-Man was just awesome seeing them in those comics. And going back and seeing this, I just love seeing Daredevil and Spider-Man work together. And again, how the writers work in the origin stories. Like, just how they work around them. I mean, the whole thing with the Taina two-parter. With the Make-A-Wish and Attack of the Octobot, we finally get, after three seasons, we get the Spider-Man, like, how he first became, we get it in the intro, the radioactive spider bit him.
Yeah,
but in that two-parter, we get him telling her, without really telling her that he's Peter Parker, that, how the spider bit him. We see all that. We see the wrestling. Oh, buddy, it's not my... we see the... So that's what I'm loving at this point in rewatching this series is just how well they don't need a whole flipping movie to tell an origin story. They don't need seven episodes of a cartoon to tell an origin story. They can fit it in within two 30-minute cartoons or two 23...
Plus the fact that this is Spider-Man... Everybody knows.
Well, yeah, but I say that a lot too. I do. I agree with you. That's why I keep asking the question about Batman every so often. When you had Michael Keaton for two movies, you had Val Kilmer for one movie, you had George Clooney for another movie, and then you have Christian Bale for three movies, and then you've got Batfleck for God knows how many he's going to be in. But, how many times do we need an origin story for Batman? But at the same time, that's me as a geek that has known about Batman's origin story for most of my life. If I was just Joe Schmo off the street that never picked up a comic book, I see why they constantly do that and constantly retell origin stories. But with this series, because it is such a love letter to where, like I said last time, and I'll continue to say that John Semper Jr. said it was a love letter to when he was reading comics when he was a kid and crafting those stories to fit properly within the time constraints of a 30-minute cartoon.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing. It really, really is. All right, getting into some episodes for season 3. Some of my favorites. The Daredevil two-parter.
Yep.
Like I said, just seeing him and Spider-Man interact and how the whole frame job of Peter Parker and seeing how Daredevil is suspicious of Spider-Man at first and then they finally do a team-up. Actually giving Eddie Brock some character development. Like, I know he's had character development in the comics in the last 20 years or so. I know there was the whole Agent Venom thing a few years ago and things like that. That's fine. But back then in the 90s, for me, Eddie Brock, guy down on his luck, sounds like Uncle, or not Uncle, sounds like Mo Sizlak, because it is Hank Azaria doing the voice. my Peter Parker, he got me fired. He made me lose my apartment and my health. So I just figured they were going to be a one-off kind of, alien costume. This is the tribute to the alien costume thing in three parts and all that. I loved it when Venom came back. I loved it that they tied it back into Strange. Well, they didn't really tie it to Strange, but they tied it to Dormammu and Baron Mordo and all that. And having Iron Man and War Machine show up. So in Venom Returns and Carnage, which is the two-parter, Robert Hayes as the voice of Tony Stark, Iron Man. Before there was...
RDJ.
Before there was Mr. Chances Are, because I will reference that 1989 movie for the rest of my life when it comes to RDJ.
Damn.
Yeah. So, before there was RDJ, there was Robert Hayes, and he was an awesome voice for Iron Man. He really, really was. And then you got Uncle Phil as War Machine. Come on, it's Uncle Phil!
Hey, and for me, both voices worked.
Absolutely.
There's still times today where I'm reading a comic, and my go-to voice for Iron Man is actually Robert Hayes and not RDJ.
Right, yeah. For me, it depends on the story.
Yeah.
Because
especially now you have writers that are trying to capture the RDJ mannerisms.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, unless you're the new Iron Maiden or whatever her name is, Riri Williams or whatever.
I think she's going... Last I checked, I think her name was supposed to be Ironheart.
Oh, boy.
I think.
That's...
Don't quote me.
That's almost as bad as The Rescue.
Actually, I'd take Rescue over Ironheart.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Another
conversation for another time.
Yeah. And as we said, part two of that is the Carnage, where Carnage is introduced and just that whole thing with Cletus Kasady, and we kind of get the return of Terry Lee, and just absolutely love that. The other one I love, obviously, Goblin War. Oh, yeah. Seeing Hobby versus Greeny, it just, it was so good. It was done so well.
Yeah.
What are some of the ones that you liked from season 3?
Well, I liked the Daredevil. I liked the Daredevil two-parter. I liked the whole thing with Dormammu. One of the things I love about it is getting into the mystic side of things and just having Spidey have to react to that.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that this is not my wheelhouse, but I'm in this anyway. Something though that I did not like, and oh god, I feel like I'm putting myself in a crosshairs, but I gotta be brutally honest. I did not like the season finale.
Yeah, Turning Point was a little strange.
Well, the problem for me, this is the thing for me, because it feels like, I gotta be honest, in the comics, the moment on the bridge with Green Goblin and Gwen Stacy and Gwen's death, that's a vital moment in Spider-Man history. That's like a big moment.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, for me, I kind of feel like, the problem is that then it becomes kind of a creative crutch. You know, did we need to have the bridge? Did we need to have the bridge? And it's like, well, since we don't have Gwen Stacy, we'll swap in Mary Jane. And to be fair, the cartoon is not the only one that decided the bridge needed to be there. I know that the Ultimate Spider-Man comics did have their own version of the bridge, and of course that I think was even worse because they had a cliffhanger where Spider-Man is like holding on to Mary Jane and being like, no, she's not breathing. And then the very next issue, she just simply wakes up. And I was like, oh, okay, so you worried me for nothing. Thanks a lot, Bendis. F you. and then we had to have the bridge and the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie. And to me, it just feels like, why do we have to have the bridge? And why does it have to be, and especially because of this idea of then swapping out swapping the female in distress.
Mm-hmm.
And then also just for the fact that this is something that can be kind of discussed a little bit more in season 4. Just the whole fact that now it's Spider-Man being angry and angsty because it's like, oh, F you, everybody. Oh, I lost the woman I love. Ah, you can all go to hell. Ah,
yeah.
Why me? And it's like, I am not interested in this.
Well, we're going to talk about season four next week, but it's one of those things where looking at the final two episodes of season three, Goblin War and Turning Point, both of these episodes were written by Mark Hoffmeyer-Mier, John Semper Jr., obviously, Robert Enskier, and Marty Eisenberg. And then Turning Point was James Krieg, John Semper Jr., Robert Enskier, and Marty Eisenberg. I've interviewed Robert Enskier a number of years ago on GCRN. It was like, until one of my other recent interviews, I think last year or the year before, it was the longest interview we had ever done, just over 2 hours talking to that guy. It was an amazing. I'll have to send you the link. But it was amazing talking to him and listening to him and whatever else. So anytime his name pops up or Marty Eisenberg's name pops up, I'm like, you know, stand at attention. Like, what's going on? Oh, good writing. Because I've seen terrible writing in cartoons. I mean, I've spent the last 5 years talking about Filmation, He-Man, and She-Ra. And there are some really great episodes of that series, of those two Filmation series, but there are also some really bad episodes of both of those series. Turning Point, I like how they kind of left it on a cliffhanger, but not really. But then once we get to 1997 in season four, they start out with Guilty and Tombstone is getting out of Rooker's Island. Really, you're going to leave us with Turning Point and come back with a Tombstone one-off? What the frig did you do, people? Come on. I think season three overall has a lot of really good episodes. Again, the voice acting is amazing as per usual.
It's also a nice mix.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a little too easy to go with the big, you know, with a big, you know, with a well-known name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, we're going to have this character voiced by Maya Rudolph because, you know, it's Maya Rudolph. Everybody knows Maya Rudolph. And then there's poor, like, Jennifer Hale or Tara Strong, and it's like, well, why not them? I'm sure they could do the character as well. No, but we need that big name. And it's like, why? You know, I like how it's a mix. You know, it's a nice mix. And, yeah, you have Uncle Phil and you have Robert Hayes doing War Machine and Iron Man. But then you also have, you know, people who are into voice acting like Hank Azaria and Neil Ross.
Yeah.
So you actually have a mix where some people who have made their living off this are getting the work, and it's not just as random bystander number one or voice in the crowd number two.
Yeah, absolutely. I am actually looking at behindthevoiceactors.com for some of these characters, and the fact that you have now, I know you're a Transformers fan a little bit,
Transformers and G.I. Joe, man, G1 and Real American Hero. That's my jam.
There you go.
As the young folks say.
You remember that awful, awful green helicopter from that movie, right, Springer?
Springer,
Neil Ross is the Green Goblin.
Yeah, there you go.
Like, green god!
A green helicopter / car to the Green Goblin. And hey, he's also Shipwreck.
Yeah, that's true. You've got my god, I did not know this, and this will come way later. Captain America is a snake. That's all I'll say, and I'll tease that late.
You don't want to do that right now. You don't want to do that right now.
No.
That's not
what
he's talking about. That's not what he's talking about.
No. I don't mean the Hail Hydra. I don't mean anything, anything like that. I'm just saying, if people have ever listened to me talk about a certain video game series and a certain voice actor for that video game series, Captain America is a solid snake.
Oh, no. Oh, man.
So
file it right now.
Let's see, who else is in here? The young Silvermane, before he turned into a baby, the whole Tablet of Time thing was Townsend Coleman.
Spoon!
Spoon! Dorian Harewood was Tombstone, so that's interesting. Ed Gilbert was Dormammu.
Oh, yeah, I recognize his voice right off the bat.
Yep.
The minute he started speaking, I'm like, hi, Hawk.
Exactly. I think what is really cool, and we'll get to this in a future season, I believe. I think it's which season is it? It's I think it's season 5. The fact that they have Roscoe Lee Brown as the voice of the Kingpin, and then later you bring in Paul Winfield as the Black Marvel. Paul Winfield is Mr. City Confidential. Remember that crime show, City Confidential? He did the narration. He did the, absolutely love that. What I think is great for this series as we go along is how much they use the main cast to do other characters. All of the Spider-Men are Christopher Daniel Barnes. Scarlet Spider, Ben Reilly, Spider Carnage, all that stuff. Jim Cummings was the Man Spider voice, so that was kind of cool. Just absolutely love some of these. Lord Zedd was Microchip. Robert Axelrod.
Nice.
Oh my God, Tony Jay was Baron Mordo. I knew recognized that voice.
I recognize that voice too. Yeah, there's like a few voices that I can pick out, and I'm like, oh, there's that guy.
Mm-hmm. Something I never knew because I didn't recognize the voice, and it happens here in season 3 with the whole Alistair finding out about his father thing. So Smythe gets turned into the super slayer thing and whatever else, and he finally finds out about his dad.
Yeah.
His dad, in the certain flashbacks that are shown in this season, his dad is voiced by Devin Miles, Edward Mulhare.
Nice.
So nice. A Spider-Man Knight Rider reference there. Nice.
And, and speaking of like his Alistair's transformation into like the Spider Slayer,
mm-hmm.
It's just, I remember I watched this episode with a friend, and the thing is that we had this running thing of trying to find moments in American cartoons of implied nudity, mm-hmm. Where it's just okay, just the way that it is, they probably are not, I think one that we pointed out was Gargoyles. There was at one point where the human lady Elisa is like on a bed, mm-hmm. and chances are that she's not wearing anything underneath, or at least whatever's her top is not strapped, right. is a strapless number. The same thing kind of with Spider-Man when you have like the whole transformation sequence. It seems like Alistair's not wearing anything under that table, or if he is, he's in some skivvies. he's not a boxer's guy.
No. Okay, so you got we've got a Knight Rider reference so mm-hmm. far. We had a Lord Zedd Power Rangers reference earlier with Robert Axelrod.
Well, and I'd have to double check, but I think Robert Axelrod, under a different name, did Robotech back in the day. So,
possible.
If that's the case, then yeah, we got Robotech in there too.
Yep. You know what's funny about the whole Power Rangers thing though is Dr. Ashley Kafka, which implies to Venom to the whole thing from Ravencroft. Barbara Goodson, Rita Repulsa from Power Rangers.
There you go. And I believe she did Robotech too. So wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the, you know,
are just all over the place.
Yeah, like you were saying, you know, certain animated shows sometimes want to bring in the big names. You know, they want to pay Chris Rock $1 million. No one ever wants to pay Chris Rock $1 million just to use his damn voice. I remember that news story from a few years ago when that came out, when he's like, oh, they pay me the big bucks to do all the voice. Looking at this cast, looking through all of this, through the main cast, the recurring characters, the guest roles, you have a who's who of a lot of, you know, Linda Gary. The first thing I ever heard her as was Tila from Filmation He-Man.
Yep.
You know, like I said before, Roscoe Lee Brown. I've seen and heard him in other things. Ed Asner would go on to be Granny Goodness. So you got J. Jonah Jameson of coming, you know, turning into Granny Goodness in the DC anime universe. You know,
and also becoming a gargoyle.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, this Jack Angel as Astro Train as Nick Fury. I mean, come on, people. Martin Landau as Mac Gargan the Scorpion. I mean, just amazing voice talent for this series and for season 3 specifically, all of the talents that came together to put the season 3 stories into motion for these characters. Absolutely love it. Anything else you want to say before we web swing on out of here?
Well, I actually just checked. I checked online, and yep, Robert Axelrod was in Robotech. So we got, mm-hmm. we got a couple of Robotech people in Spider-Man.
Yep. One thing I
still hate use of the bridge, though. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. It's all right. One thing I will point out here, only because it happened in season 1 and we never really mentioned it. Felicia's mother, Anastasia Hardy, you know who she's voiced by? Blanche, yes. From the Golden Girls, Rue McClanahan.
Yep. I kind of wonder if I should show my fiance is a big Golden Girls fan, so I wonder if I should show an episode with Felicia's mom and be like, do you know who that is?
Yeah, you should. I triple dog dare you, so now you have to do it.
Nuts.
The coup de grace of all dares.
Dog dare you.
Yeah. Damn. So, coming up next time around, we're going to talk about season 4 and then season 5. Season 4 is kind of a weird monster, because season 4 is it only had 11 episodes instead of the traditional 14 that 13-14 that it's been having, and I know they probably did this on purpose to reach that magic, you know, 65 yeah. number and all that, and that's fine, you know, that's absolutely fine, not a problem. So season 4 is coming up next here on Tooncast Beyond. Anything interesting going on in your life that you'd like to talk about?
Same stuff, just more with Let's Be Reals and more with the top secret projects that I'm working on, and and hey, and also working on a June wedding. So,
June wedding, huh?
Yep. That June works, wedding, and hey, it's and well, it'll heavily involve what brought my fiance and I together.
Awesome. Very cool, very cool.
That's all I'm going to say about that.
Okay, Forrest. I'm going to go ahead and tell you guys what's coming up on Tooncast Beyond. As I said, the next 2 weeks we're going to have more Spider-Man, so season 4 and 5. After that, episode 75 is going to be Inside Out. Would like to find a female podcaster for that one, so we have the male-female perspective. Originally, I was going to do that with my ex because she loved the movie. I love the movie, but obviously, since
I love the movie, but honestly, yeah. if I ever see John Doctor face to face, I'm going to be like, dude, you almost emotionally crippled my fiance. I mean, and it wasn't so. And it
wait. You mean Pete Doctor, not John Doctor?
Pete Doctor, sorry.
There you go. you just combined John Lasseter and Pete Doctor into one person.
We did a fusion dance.
Oh God!
But yeah, I wanna meet Pete Doctor face to face, because yeah, we saw Inside Out and we're we're both going through a roller coaster with lava, and then we get Inside Out, and we're like, okay, all right, we're fine. And then you get the thing with the imaginary friend, and it's like, damn it! And we're not fine again! It's just like Up. I mean, I knew about the beginning of Up, so, yeah. You know, I cried. I was like, okay, all right, that's fine. That's okay, wow, that got me. You know, I'm watching the movie, so I'm okay. And then we get that shot of the house on the waterfall, and I'm like, shit! Because I'm up again. Like, nobody told me about this! You didn't warn me about this!
All right, so I now have a plan for Inside Out, which I'll tell you off air. After Inside Out is going to be Big Hero 6. Hey, you shouldn't open your mouth. It's all your damn fault. So episode 76 is going to be Big Hero 6. Episode 77, Steve Megatron is going to return, and we're going to talk about Star Wars Rebels Season 1, seeing as how 1977, episode 77, Star Wars.
Good one, I like that.
Episode 78 ties into 1978, but it really should tie into 1996 because Joe Reed is going to make a return. Last time we heard from him was the Voltron Legendary Defender, but we are going to talk about Superman the Animated Series Season 1. And then episode 79 will be, thanks to a donation from a listener, Ryan Mead, myself and Movie Revolt Dan are going to be talking about Nickelodeon, The Loud House Season 1. So we're going to talk about that. And then Steve Megatron will return for episode 80, where we talk about SWAT Cats Season 1. Nice. After that, we're going to kind of have a Disney afternoon spotlight a little bit. Episode 81 will have nothing to do with Disney. It's going to be Thundercats 2011, and my buddy Peacock Michael is going to join me for that. Episode 82, 83, 84, 85 are all Disney. Gummy Bears, Darkwing Duck, Goof Troop, and DuckTales, all the first seasons of those shows.
Woo!
Yeah, let's get dangerous for the podcast here, folks. Yeah. I so need to get an interview with Jim Cummings just because I want him to say, let's get dangerous.
Oh, God, yes.
Episode 86 is going to tie into 1986 because we're going to talk about ALF, the animated series. Episode 87 is going to tie into 1987 because we're going to talk about TMNT 87 Season 1 and 2 in one episode. Now, people might be saying, but TFG1 Mike, how can you say Season 1 and Season 2 in one episode? Well, Season 1, I'm finding out through various sources, was only the first 5 episodes of the series, and then it goes to Season 2. Episode 88, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious shit. We're going to be talking about Back to the Future, the animated series. 89 is going to be Tailspin Season 1. 90 is Rescue Rangers Season 1. I need to erase that name off this script, seeing as how that's an X marks the spot moment. So episode 89 is Tailspin, episode 90 is Rescue Rangers. So those are the next, 15 episodes of the podcast. Wow. It'll probably be what our summer, spring summer is going to be, because now that I'm back home from vacation from California and, I'm back to, instead of having a 50-50 time split between online life and taking care of, significant other life, now that I'm back to 100% full-on podcasting, all that stuff, so it's going to be a blast. Tooncast Beyond is going to, we're going to go beyond everything we've ever done, so it's going to be a fun ride. You can find me at TFGNMike on Twitter. You can follow at Geekcast Radio for all the other network updates. You can follow at Tooncast Beyond. I do try my best to post stuff on that Twitter, but sometimes I usually just end up posting new episodes. Where can people find you on Twitter?
Well, still at White Balloon King, WHTBLLNKING.
Awesome. All right, Beyond Good, Beyond Evil, Beyond Your Wildest Imagination, this has been Tooncast Beyond, and keep swinging from those webs, folks, and we will catch you next time for Spider-Man the Animated Series Season 4.
And avoid bridges in New York, especially if you're female and you like Spider-Man.
Or if there's a space shuttle crashing on them. Oh, wait, that was Season 1.
Yeah.
This is starting to sound like a bad comic book plot.